And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to Jurassic Pod, episode number I do not know, but it's episode number one of 2022. I am joined by the Pascal Siakam to my Fred Van Vliet. It's Holly McKenzie. What's up?
Wow.
I feel like I'm more even keel than you are. Like Pascal's more emotional than Fred. And you know, if one of us has to be one, I think I'm Fred here. Neither of us is remotely qualified to consider ourselves the equal of the other.
I would have switched it just based on height. I would have been like, well, I'm closer to Fred's height than I am to Pascal's.
Well, I was thinking emotionally speaking.
From an emotional standpoint, for sure. Yes.
I've received all the questions about my professional status today. I appreciate them. And yes, the news is true. I have purchased a 50-inch television, which I am now watching Raptors in 30 on. And it's great because my previous TV was from 2008. It was starting to go on the fritz, and I'm really enjoying myself.
On the fritz is such a great term. Like, what is the I want to know the background to that.
If one of us is going on a monologue, the other can check that out.
Yeah. 50 inch TV. Is it downstairs in the basement. Call it a man area.
I would not call it a man cave. No. My desk is down here. There is one weight on the floor, TV, a bookshelf, some music posters. My Veronica Mars poster is beside my desk.
I'm getting serious Everybody Loves Raymond vibes.
there's like no sports memorabilia.
Did you know that he was a sports writer?
Yeah, I did. I don't think I've ever watched a full episode of Everybody Loves Raymond, but I did know he was a sports writer.
I don't remember when or the era that it was on. I feel like we were much younger, but I remember when I found out that his like job was a sports writer and he like his office or like desk was in the basement. I thought that was the coolest thing. And then I was mad that the show wasn't about that and was instead about his family shenanigans. Anyway, first episode of 2022 and holy, the Raptors are on a 4-game winning streak.
Yeah, you want to know what the
above
you
wanna, 500. We have exciting good things to talk about finally.
You want to know what the big lesson of this past week was? It's important to have your best players. That's the lesson I have. It's January 6th. We could have many important lessons this week. But in terms of the Raptors having their best players, and not to be too much of a downer, but the opposition not having their best players, it worked in the Raptors' favor. The Raptors are on a 4-game winning streak, beating the Clippers on New Year's Eve without Paul George or obviously Kawhi Leonard. They beat the New York Knicks without Julius Randle. They beat the San Antonio Spurs without DeJounte Murray. And then they beat Milwaukee, once again, without Giannis Antetokounmpo due to a non-COVID illness. Best wishes and health to all those fine gentlemen and basketballers. But the Raptors are going to take it, given the few games that preceded that one, and you know,
yeah.
the basically 12 months that preceded that four-game winning streak in general. So you got to take them where you can get them. And I guess where we start is, how much can we take from this four-game winning streak?
I think we can take more than what you would expect if you just looked at the rosters of, if you just looked at the box scores of the games, you know?
Yeah.
Like if we had no context for this season as a whole and just looked at these box scores and saw that the opponents were missing star players in some cases, it may not sound impressive at all. But when you consider the way the season has gone, and the fact that every team has had to work through games like this. I mean, the Raptors themselves, that game against the Cavs when they had, you know, what was it? 8 players, 3 who had just met. 4 who had just met. They are, every team in the league is working through this. And the fact that the Raptors have, all on top of that, have also had so many injuries, we haven't gotten to see Fred and Pascal and OG together, really, for most of the season. So to get to see the core group, also mentioning Scotty, I should mention him in there, getting to see these guys play together for, you know, more than 1 or 2 games at a time, it to me, that makes the games hold a bit more weight, regardless of who wasn't in uniform, because it's important for us. The larger us, anyone interested or invested in the Raptors. It's important for us to get to see the roster together functioning as the people who put it together had hoped or anticipated.
For sure. And so it's sort of hard to set a baseline of what the wins mean, like on an individual basis, but it is good to know how things function with, you know, certainly the top 6 pieces of this rotation, the 5 starters and Kem Birch, even though Kem Birch's minutes have been limited in many cases, I think he's sort of the 6th guy who we know we're going to see on a day in and day out basis. It's cool to see how they've looked together, and they've been largely unimpeachable. I would say there's very little, you can find momentary flaws, whether it was the last 2-minute offense in Milwaukee or the first 24-minute defense in Milwaukee, but overall, like, the group has certainly looked good.
Yeah, last night's game, that would be Wednesday's game against Milwaukee, was super entertaining, but it was also excruciating at the end because it didn't feel like the Raptors, they did this huge comeback. I think they were down 14 points earlier in the game. It was like almost like a 30-point turnaround at some point. I don't know the exact number. You may know.
I do not. I think they were down as many as 15, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Anyway.
Yeah, so there was like almost a 30-point swing in that game at one point. And instead
they were certainly
of just
up,
like,
by I don't know why I'm determined to figure this out when I don't know the numbers. They were down by at least 13 at one point and they were up by at least 14. So at minimum there was a 27-point swing, maybe more.
Okay. So that was great, obviously. If you're
God,
a
I'm so
fan.
Pedantic. It's very, very annoying. I hate being myself.
I do not hate you, and you should not hate you. And our listeners also love you, so...
It's debatable.
Treat yourself a little better. What was I saying? Oh, yes. They have this great turnaround after a horrible first half where they give up 77 points. The defense actually starts to, like, function and arrive in the third quarter. They hold the Bucks to 11 points. And then instead of recording this great triumphant victory, they crawled to the finish line of that game and a couple times almost looked as though they would nearly give it up. So yeah, the final 2 minutes was excruciating, but it was impressive to me the way the team, you know, managed to dig down and get the turnaround in the second half where they gave up 77 in the first half. It was, I think this was the third game in 4 nights for the Raptors. Yeah, it was. Sorry, my
tomorrow again, time Friday and night days. Will also be the third game in four nights.
Yeah, so for them to, you know, dig deep on the road and get that win and, you know, continue their winning streak, to me, I thought that showed, you know, just like the competitiveness of the team. And I don't want to say too much about like that show, that was a real character win, but like it was a good win. And it is nice to see the team go on a winning streak. And holy Fred VanVleet.
Yeah. Before we get to Fred, just like there were some really nice sort of presses, but double teams of the ball handlers, traps of the ball handlers in the second half that, you know, whether they created turnovers or just forced, you know, lofted passes and bad shots. I think that's something you can take away where, I mean, obviously if Giannis is on the floor, the whole geometry of the game changes. But like the Raptors succeeded in that second half, in a way you would, they sort of want to succeed. Saying all that, another way they want to succeed is Fred VanVleet, who might not ever miss a what's the opposite of a pull-up? Spot-up. Might never miss a spot-up three again. Might never, like it really seems like it's going in every time, Holly. Like,
yeah, he's
if he doesn't have to dribble, he is hitting that shot.
He has been incredible. And the first returns for the All-Star voting, I don't know the word I'm thinking of. I think that's it.
All-Star fan voting. Came in on Thursday, whatever day.
Came in on Thursday, and VanVleet is on the list. I'm sure that Raptors fans will see that and want to make a push, as they should, because there were some names on there that were ridiculous and should not be on there. Derrick Rose.
There's another name too, but we won't get into that.
Please do.
Uh-oh, he made his season debut last night.
Yeah. Well, I was focusing on one negative.
Well, it's 2022. There are all sorts of negatives we can focus on.
Two. Yeah. So anyway, sorry, I got sidetracked because I was a little surprised about a couple of the names on there. Yeah, he's been incredible. He's like you said, he's shooting the lights out from three. He's averaging 29.5 points over the four-game winning streak. Shooting, you know, incredible across the board. But one of the things that like really stood out to me is in those four games of this winning streak, he has two turnovers to 26 assists.
Ooh, I didn't even notice that.
That's crazy. That's just incredible.
I think
he's defensively awesome as well. He had a block last night. And like you said, pressuring Drew and forcing turnovers and getting steals from the other teams, the opposing team's point guard. He has just been incredible.
Yeah, and I think the turnover and assists, I think we have to bring Pascal Siakam into this. Because
yes.
part of the reason why those turnover numbers are so low is that we have another guy fully engaged in carrying a large part of that offensive burden. And that's also part of the reason VanVleet's numbers, like spot up 3-point numbers, are so high, both in percentage and in volume. He has, let me count, 29 made threes over his last five games. Is because he's getting off the ball. And not to say it's only Pascal Siakam that's allowing him to do that, because the Raptors have obviously built their team in a way that they want several guys able to take part of that burden, but Siakam has been the biggest part of that, and the biggest part of not only pushing the ball in transition, but handling it in the half court. And so Siakam, over the last little bit, just going to my handy thing here. The handy rundown that Holly put together. Go ahead.
I feel like all of our language skills have deteriorated so much over the past 2 years.
What's I'm my not excuse? Sure why. I live with a human. Anyway, we don't need to fully dissect this. But yeah,
our brains are tired.
I think many of our skills have diminished.
Pascal
Siakam for the year is now averaging 20.4 points, 8.4 rebounds, 4.4 assists per game through 22. He had 33, 5, and 6 against the Bucks. He had his first three games, or sorry, the three games before that, he had 12, 14, and 19 rebounds. He's been up above 5 assists in his 5 games since returning. He has been, you know, late game offense, which I don't think we're going to talk about because we dissected it fairly recently.
Talking about happy things.
Yeah. If you want to hear our thoughts on that, you can go back and check the archives. But he's been, you know, I don't think he's going to make the All-Star game, but he is right now playing at an All-Star level. And what I'll say even more than that is he's playing at a pre-bubble level, which is, I think, the question that people very rightly thought was, can he get back to the way he was playing before then?
Mm-hmm. He's been incredible. I know that I wasn't on the media availability. Actually, it may have been in person. I can't keep track anymore.
Me neither.
He made a joke about me. He made a joke about being Pascal Rodman.
Yeah, that was on a call. I think it was a call.
Because as you said, like, his rebounding numbers were crazy, like 19 rebounds, 14 rebounds, 12 rebounds. Like, he was awesome. But the thing that stood out to me was the assists, because he has been distributing the ball. And as you mentioned, Fred VanVleet has definitely been on the receiving end of a lot of that. But man, Pascal's just playing a great all-around game, and he definitely deserves credit for that after people had been questioning the player that he was becoming, or if there was still room for improvement for him, which is crazy because he's still super young and definitely has room to continue growing. And I think we're seeing that now. And even just getting to see him after the game in Milwaukee when he was doing the interview virtually with Matt Devlin back in Toronto, he talked about that, like getting to play with OG and Fred, who he obviously has a lot of history and experience with, but just continuing to build on that and further increase that chemistry as each of them are playing bigger roles now. And it's good. It's really good. We've talked all season about wanting to see OG, Pascal, Fred, Scotty, Kem, as you're mentioning, like getting to see the core together healthy at the same time. It's only been a couple games. The competition has been, you know, undermanned in a lot of those cases, but yeah, it's been really good to see.
Did you hear pretty clearly picked up in by the audio late in the game when Bobby Portis and Siakam took turns missing free throws down the stretch, the other just yelling, "Yes, sir," at the guy who was missing free throws. I love, but like, what Bobby Portis has turned into as a player, and yet, like, I could perfectly imagine why he would cause that sort of reaction in anybody, and especially somebody as emotional. I mean, Pascal sort of wears his heart on his sleeve, I think, and yeah.
I'm still in Nova Scotia, and my mother wanted to fight Bobby Portis last night.
Well, and I was lined up behind Nikola Mirotic, Bond.
I was trying to explain to her that, like, that's the role that he plays for this team, for the Bucks, and, you know, he's a really fun player and a really good guy, and, you know, he's found this home in Milwaukee that, like, he's super loved, and it's awesome. But she did not want to hear any of that. She had no interest in the Bobby Portis story. She was just extremely mad at him for frustrating Pascal late in that game. So, that was funny.
It pains me to admit that finally, all these years later, we might have to give the Bobby Portis versus DeLon Wright battle that only I was keeping track of from the 2015 draft. We might have to give it to Portis.
No way.
No?
This is shocking. We have to lead with this when we promote this episode. You are turning on the best player in the world.
I mean, he just hasn't found the right spot yet. I'll just say that.
Eric, yeah. This is shocking.
Well, I mean, at some point, you gotta contribute to a winner, man. At some point, you gotta do it. I'm not saying that's all his fault, but, I want, as the, I believe, X-Files movie said, I want to believe, but,
That was a question on Jeopardy the other night.
It was, yes.
And they
Amy Schneider. Got... Man.
So awesome. So awesome.
Kelna, did you see she got, she was held up at, I don't know if it was gunpoint, but she was mugged in Oakland, where she's from.
Oh my gosh, no, I didn't. She's, recently? She's, like, this, yeah. this is a, yeah. No.
She's okay, apparently, but that sounds scary.
That is terrible. Thank goodness she is okay. Man, you're just hitting me with lots of surprising things right now.
Yeah.
That were not in the rundown. Whew.
Sorry, I just, you know, we gotta stay on our toes for the
definitely hadn't heard that. Getting back to to basketball though, everyone is out of protocols except for Svi and Utah currently, correct?
That is correct.
So that's good news. Hopefully that continues. Also wanted to mention Justin Champagny, who has been getting some time for the Raptors and making the most of it. I think he only had 6 points against the Bucks. I may be getting that wrong. But that was after having 14 points against the Spurs. And it's just really fun to see him out there. I kind of love his interviews, how like honest and open he is, dating back to when he had that game winner that got waved off and he said how much it hurt. Like, he's just really open about his experience, like being the guy that's trying to like break into the rotation. And I like him. I like him a lot.
Yeah,
he's a fun story.
Certainly in the media, we're willing him into a rotation role because he is such a thoughtful and enthusiastic, quotable young man. And
he's fun.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what you notice is his feel for the game.
He always manages to be in the right place to get an offensive rebound.
Yeah, whether it's like, an offensive rebound or whether he had like two really nice cuts yesterday off the ball to get himself layups. And if you're not going to be a knockdown three-point shooter, and with apologies to the... you know, the 4-3 game against the Spurs, I don't think we're ready to crown him as, you know, a bona fide 3-point threat yet. You better figure out how to be in the right place, but you better figure out other ways to get yourself open and make yourself an offensive threat. And he certainly showed that. And, you know, the reason he's getting these minutes quite clearly is because of the two gentlemen who are in protocols, as you mentioned, Svi and Utah. And so let me turn it back to you. Has Champagny, over these last few games, done enough to, if not leap those guys, certainly put himself in the, make it like an equal competition for those, let's say, first wing off the bench minutes?
I feel like we still have Utah, and then there's probably like 1A and 1B between Champagny and Svi.
Now, is that what you think, or is it what you think Nick Nurse thinks?
I think both. I think that for the both of us. I think that, and I also think that that's probably where Nick is. Well, no, that's wrong.
That's why I asked the question, because Svi and Utah at least appear to be equals. I think they, like in their last game they played, they literally split the minutes.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
That's definitely what I think. I think that for Nick, it's probably Svi and Utah, and then we probably still have Champagny a little bit below that in terms of who he's been willing to give time to. But I definitely think that he is making the case for himself, and he should be getting a look if other options are not working. How about you? Where do you see that shaking out? What do you think that Nick thinks, and then what do you think?
I think it may very well, and this is just a gut feel on Nick, it might be a situation right now where it's what does he feel the team needs situation. If he feels that need for a bit more playmaking off the dribble, he'd probably go Svi. If he feels that need for, you know, a bit more agile defense and And I mean, it's not like he can't create, but I think Utah's big obvious advantage over those other two is probably his defense and his versatility. It would go to him. And if he thinks he is just sort of, not that Utah's not going to give you energy, but a very much like around the rim type of energy, he probably goes Champagne. I think Utah has the best track record with this team and deserves the bulk of those minutes. Because like I did the math yesterday. If like, let's call them the big six, I'm including Birch, if they basically get the minutes we're expecting, there's only about 55 minutes a game left over to fill. And, you know, that's not nothing, but it doesn't, unless you're really, really bastardizing some lineups, it doesn't leave a lot of room for all three of those guys on most nights. And if they do, if all three do play, it's probably an instance where, you know, one of them gets the first chance and struggles, and then the second one comes in, and if he struggles, the third one comes in, maybe. But yeah, I like my opinion would probably be Utah, and then very much like read the room or read the game situation between Svi and Champagne. But I think it's probably Utah and Svi, and then Champagne from Nurse until we see otherwise.
Just before we jump into something else, I just quickly wanted to mention OG. I know we didn't talk about him individually here, but he has kind of been like the like just the solid guy.
Well, you know what they say, real G's move in silence.
Wow. That was executed quite well. I am impressed.
Thank you.
OG's just been really solid. He's been good. And we talked about the trio of OG, Pascal, and Fred. Obviously, we talked about Fred and Pascal, but it's good to see him out there. And
yeah, OG, it's funny, like he'll rarely does he string like four quarters of offense together, but there always seems like there's not always, but most games there is like whether it's just one quarter or a half a quarter, there's like a definite stretch in which he carries the offensive load. I mean, not as if they're just giving him the ball and letting him go to work, although that has happened a bit more on the post, and you've seen him. Like the most impressive thing to me is he can get such good position with his strength that he can take a turnaround jumper from the paint and, like, where he's falling back and still, like, wind up landing in the paint. Like that's just how strong he is and how good he is at getting his own position. Like, obviously his assortment of moves isn't as, as vast as Pascal's, but he gives them a different look. He gives them a very physical look. Who was he giving the business to on the Spurs? A few guys, Josh Primo, who we'll get to in a second, being one of them. But there were just a few guys who cannot physically hang with him, and that is because he is built like a refrigerator.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
I was going to say, that's my favorite thing about That has been my favorite thing about OG this year, is it feels like at least once or twice a game when he's playing, there, even though we are, you know, super familiar with OG, with his frame, with his game, there's at least one or two times each game where I'm just like, oh my goodness. Like, it blows me away how strong he is. Like, he just asserts his will and his strength on the defender, and they can't do anything against him because he's so unbelievably strong and also skilled and adept at using that strength to get exactly where he wants. It's really cool.
Yeah. Not always pretty, but pretty effective is how I'll describe it. And yeah, it's certainly, I mean, we haven't talked about his defense and just having that dude out there basically able to guard 1 through 5, the almost the number one guy I'd want on any player, given the Raptors' options, is obviously huge. We had
Josh Primo.
We had two returns this week, very different returns. let's start where you just said, Josh Primo.
This isn't a return, but a debut. Well,
it's a return to his home.
Okay, fair.
The Spurs rookie, the youngest player in the league, from Mississauga, made his first appearance at Scotiabank Arena, and instead of having hundreds of tickets, he had about 20 tickets, he said, and when he got the little Canada Basketball Welcomes You Home video, those 20 fans of the, I don't know, 140 fans in attendance or whatever it was, they stood up and he was solid. I mean, what were your impressions of
I just love him. He just turned 19. He looks 14. He is just delightful. I know that it's happened before and it's going to continue to happen more and more often, but it's just really, it's still very cool to me to see players coming into the league and having their first game at Scotiabank Arena when they grew up coming to Raptors games. Like when that was their way of learning the NBA and getting close to the NBA and really envisioning what they wanted their future to be. For them to have that first game, they're always just, it just is amazing to me. I'm still not over it. And I think it's so cool. And while I was really disappointed for him that, like, you know, obviously there aren't fans and he's not getting that, like, true, you know, normal, quote unquote, game experience, to have his family there, I'm sure it was just really special for him. And because it's so out of the ordinary, he definitely will not forget it. And I'm sure that the first game he gets to come back here when there are fans and things are, please, hopefully back to some sense of normalcy, he'll get to have kind of like two debuts at home.
Yeah. You want me to ruin your life? Of course you do. So before the game, the assembled media got a chance to talk to him, and he said that obviously the Raptors, big part of why he fell in love with basketball, said, you know, Vince, DeMar, Rudy Gay, he even stood, like, his team when I did the math, and now I forget, I think he was 11 years old. So, like, he, during the anthems, he, like, his team was, like, you know how the players have, like, youth players sometimes standing in front of them. He stood in front of Rudy Gay, and he said he had talked to Pop about that because Pop obviously got done coaching Rudy Gay.
My goodness, that makes me want to cry.
Do you want to know how old Josh Primo was when Vince Carter was traded from the Raptors?
How old is 18? Oh my God, how old was he?
2.
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Wow. Yeah.
Anyway, he was really good. I don't have his box score in front of me, but I think he had 15 points. Nice shooting stroke. As Coach Pop said, Pop was in a great mood, by the way, which is really weird because none of his favorite restaurants were open in Toronto, but he said, like, ideally he would be in the G League right now, but, you know, the Spurs are going through it. I saw they just had a few more people enter protocols. So, yeah, he was good, and I think he was a bit of a surprise to be taken in the lottery, but given where he is in his development, he's been pretty good for the Spurs. Sorry, go on.
Oh, whenever you see the Spurs take somebody that you didn't expect, you kind of just are like, oh, clearly we missed the memo on this guy. He will be great.
I would say, are we still doing that with the Spurs? Except, like, I actually like every player on the Spurs. Like, yeah. I get why they haven't come together as a team. Like, it's maybe just they're hitting, like, a bunch of B and B pluses, which in the Western Conference over the last 10 years isn't going to win you much of anything. But like when I think about their individual pieces, whether it's Devin Vassell or Keldon Johnson or DeJounte Murray or Derek White or Lonnie Walker, like I like all those guys. Like I think they're all like really useful. Jakob Poeltl, of course. Like I think all those players are like very useful NBA rotation players. I guess that in theory makes them a candidate for a sort of, you know, trade for an unhappy superstar type trade. But yeah, it's hard to know where they're going. But they got some guys, and Josh Primo appears to be one of them. Serge Ibaka also returned his first game in Scotiabank since February 2020. And yeah, the first... And sorry, we saw a tribute video for him. That was weird.
Yeah, I wanted the vibe check on that because we, like, on the broadcast watching from home, they did show the tribute video with like a little, with like the little picture in picture thing. So they had the camera on Serge in the huddle, and it was just very awkward because, you know, in a normal game when there's lots of fans, the, like, obviously players are aware that the tribute video is happening. It's usually happening during a timeout when the coach is talking to you. So you're kind of listening to your coach, but also, you know, acknowledging the fans. There are no fans to acknowledge. And, like, everyone's listening to the, you can't help but hear the video. So it just looked really awkward because he's trying to listen to the coach, but also it's obvious that he can hear what's happening. And, yeah, it was... It looked uncomfortable.
Yeah, I honestly don't know what the right thing to do in that situation is.
Neither do I.
Because, like, I was thinking of it, like, my first reaction is, why don't you just wait until there are fans and then show the tribute video then? But then I'm thinking, like, if you don't acknowledge him, and let's remember, it's not like, I wouldn't say the situation was ended acrimoniously, but there was, I mean, Serge Ibaka definitely had different feelings in terms of how free agency was going to go. So if there's nothing, and I my first thought about this secondary thought is that we're probably overthinking it and the players don't care a ton about this sort of stuff, especially when there are no fans in the arena. But if you don't have a tribute for him, does it sort of rub more salt in the wounds in terms of his time there? It's not like,
and you also don't want to wait because you just don't know what, you don't know.
Are you saying we can't predict the future?
No, well, yes.
Now on the phone, Danny Green.
Right though, like if you keep wait, you know, you may be like, oh, we'll just do this the next time. Well, Danny Green still doesn't have his Danny Green has won another championship in the meantime. Yeah, has that ring, yeah. And still doesn't have this ring. So yeah.
And there's nothing, I think ultimately showing it was the right thing. You can always show it again when the fans are in the arena. And
it was a great video. Like it was a really nice tribute video. Just, I felt bad because I know that fans would have loved to have seen Serge, and I know it would have meant a lot to him because, you know, hearing the interviews that he did the week that he returned, he did an interview with the Will Liu show, the Raptor show. Yeah. He did it with Alex Wong. And just hearing him talk about the fans, and his message was, I want them to know that I love them too and that they're always going to be, like, family to me. Like, you can tell that it meant a lot to him, the relationship he had here. So I look forward to getting to see his first return with fans. And then there's going to be another one this weekend when the Pelicans come to Toronto, and we get to see JV for the first time since he was traded to the Grizzlies midway through the 2019 championship season. It's kind of crazy to think that he hasn't been back since then. That really made me stop.
He did attend a playoff game.
He came to a playoff game, yeah. And I cried. I don't think we were sitting, I was so overwhelmed by the moment of everything because it was the playoffs and everything was everything. And then when it started coming through the media row that JV was here, I wasn't prepared for it. And it did make me a little bit emotional.
So last week you said that Fred and DeMar are like your two guys in terms of the Raptors. That it's, I mean, obviously DeMar's on a different team and he's leading Eastern Conference backcourt players and votes, and, but like he's the two guys for those are the two guys for you that it was just like you're super invested in them. It's hard to imagine them as not Raptors, and like you'll always sort of be, I don't want to quote you, misquote you, but you'll always be pulling for them just because of who they
absolutely
were as people. Is Jonas in like that next tier? Because he is for me.
I was just going to say, Jonas is like right there. Like, yeah. I don't think anyone will ever become DeMar or Fred for me, just because I just think they're both such, I've gotten to see such a special side of each of them, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we've talked to them so much. I mean, I'm sure that if I had spent that much time talking to Jonas over the years, I probably would feel similarly. But yeah, his personality in the locker room, some of the best, funniest moments, just away from like what we do as a job, just like talking to Jonas and just like seeing some of the funny things he's done in the locker room and just the way he engaged with us. He's just a truly delightful person, and I'm really glad that we got to have that time with him. I mean, I'm sure you've spent a lot of time in the locker room with him before games.
Yeah, no, one of my favorites for sure. Speaking of Serge, you had a great piece in the Toronto Star about Serge.
Other
than Sportsnet editor Mike Corrine reached out to me to say it was a great piece by you.
He messaged me on Twitter.
Oh, yeah?
It was very nice of him.
Yeah.
And thank you for saying that. Loved to write about Serge.
Yeah. And final potential return item, Kyle Lowry... I'm going to fact check you here, Daniel Dale style. The Miami Heat's return, as opposed to what it says on our rundown, has been moved.
Did I get it backwards?
It's been moved from the 3rd of February to the 1st of February. You had March.
I have March. Listen.
Lousy smarch weather is a joke you will not
March
understand.
March is February. February is April. April is September. It doesn't matter.
Will we have fans? I don't know. I very much doubt it will be a full arena by that point. I will say, I'm going to contradict myself. Like, maybe don't show the Kyle video.
show
there
a
are
lesser
no fans.
Kyle video. Like, save the good stuff. Save the best save, Kyle
save
video.
The, yeah, this could be like this could be the regular Justice League, and then we get the Snyder Cut Justice League
But wasn't that bad? Wasn't
no? I think the critical consensus. I don't really know anything when it comes to DC. Most comic book movies, but I think in particular DC comic movies. But I think it was generally agreed that the Snyder Cut was better than the first version.
I thought it was bad. I don't know why.
Oh, well, I think,
do you watch
I think
Marvel?
It was just an internet. Meme for so long
that maybe
just like obnoxiously long things were the Snyder Cut version. Do I watch Marvel? I'm not sure what that question means. There are many Marvel products out there.
Marvel movies, superhero
I'm not a connoisseur. Like, I've seen some, but yeah, like, I don't seek them out. You watched all of them, right?
I have now watched all of them.
But
I
you were doing a thing where you were watching most of them.
Yeah, and now I've seen them all. So I became a Marvel stan during the pandemic. The first Marvel movie that I saw was Black Panther, and then I saw, I'm maybe messing up the order of this, and then I saw Captain Marvel, and then I saw the Avengers, the last Avengers movie. Confuse the title. Was that? Yes. So I saw that not knowing anything about what happened before. And then I went back and started from the beginning. And wow, people who tell you you can just watch one without watching the other, you miss so much. You have to go back and watch them in order. And I've watched the TV shows. And I'm really not like the person that I'm sure you would never have thought that I would be the superhero person.
I thought there would have been a lot more pop culture things you would have looked to get into before.
I would like you to get into it. We could do a Marvel episode. That would be so fun.
Oh, man.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I really think it wouldn't be, because I think the hardcore fans are so hardcore that we would be ridiculed on the internet. Rightly. We would, like,
no,
I mean, when it comes to that, we are. Like, I think it's a bad idea, Holly, frankly.
I know, but I think it just would be fun, because I love it. They could make fun of me. I don't care. I really got a lot of joy from these movies.
So what's your, if you had to pick one, what's your
Captain
favorite
Marvel.
Watch?
Well, Black Panther and Captain Marvel.
I think I did watch Captain Marvel on the on a plane at one point, and I did see Black Panther.
Brie Larson is so cool. I just loved her character. I love that. I just love her.
Because you love 90s angst, baby. That's what it's about for me.
The music was really, really good. Yeah. She's just cool. And the shows, you haven't watched WandaVision. You not watching WandaVision actually is shocking to me.
I can't say girls. That's inappropriate. One of my favorite actresses is in it.
One of my girls.
Well, it's because I was like looking for like something that was the equivalent of GOAT, but it's not like she's the greatest actress of all time.
Right.
But like, I love Catherine Hahn. Is where we're going with this. Did you, by the way, speaking of GOAT, before we get onto some reader questions, I saw Jennifer Lawrence on Colbert, and she was talking about their movie, which I watched on New Year's Day, or sorry, Christmas Day, which for the second week in a row I cannot remember. Don't Look Up.
And Don't Look Up.
Meryl Streep is in that. As well, and they were like calling her the GOAT on set the whole time, and obviously Streep didn't know what it
meant.
And then eventually they were like they were going somewhere. It's like, Meryl, come here. You're like, you got to come here. And she's like, oh, the old goat can't keep up. Like, I'm just an old goat or something like that. So Jennifer Lawrence was telling this story about how Meryl Streep was bewildered by the term, which
that's delightful. I enjoy that.
Which also reminds me of the Athletic launch in Toronto when my friend Lindsay was in town, and there on the bar there was a picture of Michael Jordan as like the crying Jordan meme, and she was like, oh look, it's like the crying guy as opposed to Michael Jordan. Shout out to Lindsay.
Shout out to Lindsay.
I asked for some reader questions. And, you know, we like engaging y'all here. Nick DePath.
I can't believe you shut down my Marvel idea. I was really excited about that.
I'm just trying to save us some
That's fair.
Bad replies.
I can't even get the titles straight, but I genuinely do love the movies a lot.
Just express your passion, express your joy, and we move on.
I think you need to watch WandaVision. But anyway, we'll move forward.
Okay. Nick DePass asks, is my new desk next to Maggie Haberman? Yes, I have hired Maggie Haberman as my unpaid intern. She's going to have to move here, though. Next, from Ali Abassi, if we continue this great form, is there any chance of us acquiring someone who can contribute in a win now scenario? Holly, thoughts?
I feel like probably that's not where I envisioned things happening going. I kind of just feel like the team's riding out the season to see what they have and what could be added at a, you know, point in the future, and just see how the pieces that are on the team currently work together. I feel like the team, the record has been disappointing compared to what the team looked like at the very first of the season. I feel like the past four games, this winning streak, and even a little bit longer than just the winning streak, the team is starting to just be healthy and show more of what we first saw at the start of the season. And I kind of just feel like the team's gonna just see where they end up with this group. What do you think?
Yeah, it brings me back to an old Masai Ujiri phrase that he used during the uptick in play that started when he came aboard and with the Rudy Gay trade. This very much seems like a let's give them a platform season.
Let's give them a platform, see
what they can do. Do I think it's possible? Sure, I think it's possible. But like, when you think about like making a significant move for a win now guy, like, there aren't many trades. I mean, those guys make money, first of all, or else the teams probably wouldn't want to get rid of them. So who are you trading that makes a significant amount of money that you really want to get rid of? Like, to upgrade on Gary Trent, I think it would take...
Gary's been really good.
No, exactly. This is my point. Like, it would take, like, quite an intriguing player. And so that deal becomes tough. Like, okay, you can put together Chris Boucher, who, by the way, has been pretty damn good himself lately, and Cam Birch's contracts. That gets you up to $13 million. But what is that really getting you in return unless you're throwing in a first as well? So is it possible? Yeah, like if I think of any, like if there's anything, I sort of think it's another... I know people are yelling about a big, but I think the actual answer is another perimeter, like, shooter who can defend. Like, another 3 and D guy, like, which those guys are hard to get. So I would say, yes, it's possible. My gut, like, this is my boring answer, is always bet against a trade because they're really hard to make. But
we could be wrong, and it could be really surprising and fun. We'll see.
Yeah, but that's how I'm feeling. Possible, but not likely. Alex Wong, producer of The Raptor Show, asks, should Raptors who only played in Tampa be remembered as Raptors players?
I'm trying to erase Tampa Raptors from
This was caused by our conversation about Rodney Hood last night, I believe.
Yes. No, I do remember that exchange. I'm trying to forget that, like, that happened. In my brain, it goes from bubble to this year. That didn't happen. But it was the Tampa Bay Raptors. It was that season that led to the Raptors getting to draft Scotty Barnes.
Exactly.
So,
like, think how many bad lineups these, not to besmirch the names of, you know, Alex Lynn or Rodney Hood or DeAndre Bembry, who was pretty we had a lot of DeAndre Bembry conversations about his vibes. His vibes were immaculate.
He's with the Nets and playing well. Also,
his vibes
Stanley
remain
Johnson.
Immaculate.
Yes, and Stanley Johnson signed with the Lakers, so that was great to see
today. You better believe I tweeted out the picture of him in sunglasses when I saw that news.
Listen, that was good. I was very happy for him. But yes, you know what? I'm going to take a step back and not be just bitter because I didn't like last season. You can't rewrite history. History needs to remain as it is, and they are part of Raptors history, yes.
Very powerful message on January 6th. You cannot rewrite history.
Oof. Sorry, I didn't even...
I know you didn't, but I'm making things... making things work.
Yeah.
Rob Senta asks...
I think that's 3 actual times today that you have left me speechless and or made me make a sound of shock. Anyway, continue.
Rob Senta asks, which Raptors 905 player from the last 2 years would you most like to have on the Raptors roster this year? Do you have an immediate answer or I can give you mine?
I do, but it's not really fair because, well, I think it's fair. It's valid, but it's probably, it's not, anyway, Aaron Best would be my answer.
Oh, that is valid. Why?
That is valid. Newly brought back to 905.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with him from Canada Basketball, and I just really enjoy his game, and I think that would be really fun. Who would be your pick?
Fun answer, wrong answer. The right answer is Gary Payton II.
Oh, for sure. Well, I guess I didn't even think about, I didn't even consider that as a valid option because he's not available at this time. Is it allowed to be anyone who's like...
Who's played for the Raptors 905 in the last 2 years?
Oh, I was thinking it was someone that was on the team now or...
Or would be...
Never mind.
Yeah. Alize John...
Like in the G League still.
Alize,
I was thinking like...
Yeah. Who's available and not on another NBA team and playing awesomely in a role for that team. Alize Johnson, also another fun piece. I'm pretty much stuck there. Cool. Well, we go in. Thank you for all the questions. I'm going to try more often than not to send something like this out just so we can keep a finger on the pulse, if you will, of what you guys are wondering about. We are a little beyond a month away from the trade deadline, and questions always pop up then, so plenty of time to get those sorts of questions in. Coming up for the Raptors, we've got Utah, and just because I mentioned earlier in the podcast that the Raptors have been playing opponents without their best players. Rudy Gobert did not play last night. He's day-to-day, so we'll see. Joe Ingles is out, or I believe is out. He's in protocols.
And Utah's first player this season to go into protocols.
That's remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. However they managed to do that. Impressive. Bogdan Bogdanovic has a left finger sprain, but did play and played 40 minutes. That's very Nick Nursey. last night in the Jazz win in Denver, and he scored 36 points. So his finger seems his finger seems fine. Donovan Mitchell also has an ailment, but played through it. But haven't seen the official injury report yet. Then, as we mentioned, New Orleans for the JV return. And then we get
Nikhil Alexander Walker also will be in Toronto. That's exciting for him.
Obviously, Zion Williamson not coming. He's in Portland now, continuing his rehab in one of the more depressing non-protocol related stories of the year. And then the Phoenix Suns will be in town on Tuesday. Three Western Conference opponents. Two of them very good. The third one, at least fun and certainly trending in the right.
I thought you were talking about.
About New Orleans. Yeah, you got two of the three best teams in the Western Conference and in the league. I mean, two of the, you know, probably five top championship contenders, I'd say right now, like Milwaukee, Brooklyn, and then the three in the West. I would say is the top level of championship contender. Anybody else you'd throw in there, Holly? Chicago?
Oh my goodness. Yes. Sorry, I was counting the West teams. Sorry, yes, obviously. I agree with Zach LaVine, who said today, I do not put a cap on where I think this team can go. I feel the same. We mentioned DeMar DeRozan leading all guards in All-Star voting in the East. He was just named the player of the month, and he also became the first player in history to hit game-winning buzzer beaters on consecutive nights versus the Pacers and the Wizards. That was awesome. If you haven't seen those highlights, look them up.
Yeah, DeMar has now had memorable moments on December 30th, 31st, and January 1st, his 52-point game, which until last
against
year...
Against the Bucks, right?
Yeah, until last year was the all-time Raptors record. Fred VanVleet broke it. I will predict the Raptors go 2-1 this week, beating Utah, which seems stupid as I say it, but, you know, and then beating New Orleans and losing to Phoenix. But
That would be good.
I think Raptors fans should take a 2-1 next little stretch. I don't think they should turn their noses up at it. But obviously, you know, I think even New Orleans is kind of spicy, and we'll learn a lot more about this team and what they can do this week.
I think your take is probably an optimistic but smart take, but
you're going to say 3-0?
I am, because I just want the good times to keep rolling, and I want to have fun things to talk about, so why not?
Yeah, see,
the key for the Raptors seems to be playing at home, but without fans.
Yeah.
And these three games will be at home without fans.
To relive a moment that was not caught on the tapes after Fred VanVleet's press conference on Tuesday, somebody asked him about playing in front of the fans. He came close to saying, like, look how good we're doing without him, but he didn't quite say that. And so he's like, you know, we're excited to play in front of them again, blah, blah, blah. And afterward, I said, you should have just thrown the fans under the bus and said, like, they were holding you guys back all this time. And Fred VanVleet said, no, I can't do that. I need the All-Star votes. So if you would like... I am an unaffiliated member, but you can go out and vote for Fred VanVleet in any number of ways. Holly, happy 2022.
Thanks so much. Let's hope the Raps keep rolling so I don't look like a fool, but happy 2020. to.
Thanks everybody
to you as well
for listening. Well, for listening, we will probably come back after those three games and before the Raptors go on what I believe is a 5-game road trip. Everybody stay safe, and we will catch you next week. See ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.